Hi, everyone. I'm Lori Hennessy with the League of Education Voters, and I am so utterly excited to introduce you to two wonderful folks on the screen with us. Hello, Nikki Wilkes and Alex Craighead.
Hey, Lori. Hello, listeners. Hey.
Hi. So welcome to Washington Game Changers, which is a podcast that we have at League of Education Voters. And it's a place that we created to give us a chance to talk about those who are doing good in the world and those who are making the community a better place. So you're in some very good company with folks that we've talked to in the last year. And I've heard about both of you over the last couple of years. We all live on Vashon Island, where Journeymen started. But before we get to that, I do want to just be transparent that one of you was the boy who lived down my driveway when you were growing up. And I just have to say, this is pretty freaking cool to talk to you now as professionals. So thank you to both of you for the great work that you're doing. So I'm going to go to you because I just love, love, love Journeymen. And I'm sure that I cannot describe it as well as I've heard the both of you. So go ahead and tell us about your organization that you both founded.
Yeah, I'll get it started. So Journeymen is a nonprofit based here on Vashon Island, but serving, I'd say broadly, kind of around Puget Sound, Seattle, Tacoma, Western Washington. Occasionally, we work with folks from Canada or even as far down as California, but really our focus is pretty local and regional, and our mission is to encourage compassionate, inspired, and resilient young men, and we do that through what we call nature-based rites of passage, mentorship, and community engagement, and a lot of our work centers in kind of three different areas. One of them is in the mentoring bucket, where we're working with young folks in schools during the school day, most likely, and creating what we like to call brave spaces for young people to process and talk about real life stuff that's happening in their lives. Another bucket is what we call our rites of passage, or kind of the outdoor side of our work. Every spring and summer, we work with anywhere from 1 to 200 young people in a camp-based experience where we bring in mentors, facilitators, guides, and oftentimes elders, as well as participants and families, and create these really deeply meaningful experiences to mark, celebrate, and acknowledge significant life transitions. And for us, that is when boys are leaving childhood and entering adolescence, and then also when adolescents are really marking their transition into being an adult. And the final bucket is training. So we do a lot of training for adults who want to develop their own leadership capacity. Maybe they're educators, oftentimes therapists, or really just youth workers and human development folks as a whole. And so we train folks both in our rites of passage methodology, but also in circle process, which is a really effective form for group communication, reconciliation, and really what we like to call kind of community building, and focus on that unit as part of our village.
Wow. All right. What was the genesis of the idea?
It's a great question. And I think one of the guiding questions for us has been what's missing, what's needed. And both Nikki and I, we've been running Journeymen for about 5 years now. And prior to starting the organization, we both were witnessing a lot of patterns in our personal lives, in our community, and then in the greater culture, different threads that were often concerning, that raised flags. And it started even as teenagers. For both of us, we grew up together. We were best friends in high school, and we checked all the boxes for, being a successful student. We had good grades. We were playing sports. Our families were involved in our lives. And at the same time, we were still needing additional support. We were navigating different issues of substance abuse and coming of age at a time where certain patterns of masculinity were celebrated and others were shamed. So suppressing a lot of patterns of sadness or shame or fear, those were not acceptable in our friend group. So we never acknowledged those. And years of suppressing half of the emotional spectrum leads to different patterns and tendencies, both for us in our own personal lives. And then when we see looking out at our culture, for myself, I'd been teaching for a while, almost 10 years now, and was seeing a lot of patterns of my male students needing additional support. My male students were the ones getting sent to the principal's office and getting suspended and expelled in high school. They were often the ones getting into reckless drunk driving, car accidents, or getting into fights and perpetuating different patterns of sexual harassment and assault. And then on a greater scale, seeing these issues play out with school shootings, with the Me Too movement, and just these other patterns of, I think, behaviors that are as a result of the lack of our connection to our heart and the emotional spectrum that we as humans all need to tap into. And that coupled with, so noticing these patterns coupled with Nikki was in grad school at the time. He had an assignment for his marketing class where he had to design 5 different small business plans. And he sent those to me for review, just asking for some feedback on his business plans. And one of them was around apprenticeship and mentorship of young adults. And it jumped out at me as feeling like there was a real need there. And I got so excited about it. I was like, we should do this. And like, it was just an assignment for a class at the time. And so the time wasn't right then, but that was really like the seed, the planting of what has now become Journeymen. And over the following years of that seed, we started to notice more patterns. And there was a string of young adult suicides in our community. Nearly all of them were young men. And there was just a final incident where one other young man took his life. And Nikki and I just knew in our hearts that this, like this idea that we had been stewarding needed to come to life, that we needed to do something more than just talk about what can be done, but we needed to actually do something. And it was around that time where Journeymen was birthed, and we started here on Vashon Island, and we started small. And it's now grown to, as Nikki mentioned, hundreds of kids coming through our camps each year. We have almost 20 employees. We're in Seattle, Tacoma, Vashon. We're flying out to Washington, D.C. in a few months to support others to bring this kind of work alive in their community. So it really is striving to meet a need that is so clear to us and many others here in our community that are supporting bringing this work to life, because we can't do it alone.
So looking at you both, it's been, 15 years since high school? What are some of the things, looking at your own experiences at that time, that you both, I know, have mentioned when I hear you talk about some of the things that you look back and see in yourself? What are some of the things that, you know, a lot of people who listen to this podcast are parents. What do you now, in your wisdom, both through Journeymen and as teachers, as former high school students yourself, what do you tell parents to do? Because I mean, mental health is, if only it's getting worse, it feels, every year for many, many kids, right? I mean, this is an incredibly difficult time. So what do you find yourselves telling parents? What can they be doing more to help and support their kids? What's kind of advice do you usually give?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I'm currently teaching high school. And I would say that as a teacher, and also now as a parent of young ones, I think so much of the support is best served up front during those early years. So if anybody's listening as parents of young ones and thinking like, oh, well, things aren't very hard yet, or, you know, I'm not there yet, to recognize that really intentional time and bonding during the early years, you know, creates the relationship glue, so that when the tension and the drama shows up later, that there's enough of a relationship there to hold that. And for folks, I would say, who are parents of teens or supporting teens, I think it's really important for me to recognize that there's always been, I think, a sense of the older generations telling young people like, oh, I know what that's like, or I've been there. And it's always annoying, because we can always remember being in high school and being like, they don't get it. Like, you know, there's boomer jokes now. Like, there's a sense that the older generations just don't get it. And I think there's a unique wound that young people get to carry today, which is they're quite literally being raised in an environment in which the very existence of Earth, of humanity, is being questioned. Like, they're dealing with climate change and they're dealing with problems that they didn't even contribute to. And this isn't talked a lot often as a source of mental health problems, but I like to look at the field, the collective field that we're all a part of, and the sense of anxiety that that produces, which is to say, there's a lot of really smart people saying that in 15 years, the rate of extreme weather events and drought and species loss is going to cause cataclysmic changes in the way that we live. And those are problems that, you know, I want to say our young people will have to solve, but they're also things that contribute, I think, to a general sense of anxiety, or on the flip side, depression and disengagement, that don't get a lot of connection around that. So yeah, there's individual stuff, you know, bullying and all these things that have always been a part of our lives, but never before has an entire generation been faced with the real tragic circumstance that we currently have. And I want to hold that. Like, I want to hold that and not put pressure on them and not pretend like, oh, it's always been that way. Things are always, you know, these are just the same patterns repeating themselves, because that's partially true. And no previous generation has ever been, you know, really raised in the context that their entire world and way of being might not be around by the end of their lifetime. And that's a lot to hold.
Yeah. Thanks, Nikki. I'll chime in by saying, like, you know, there's a lot of fundamental human needs that we all have. And so many young people, those are going unmet during this time. And as Nikki mentioned, some of the global issues that are unfolding, all while navigating COVID and 2 years of isolation during a pandemic, all while coming of age with social media and the instantaneous gratification of your smartphone in your pocket. And at the same time, these kids are so connected digitally, but they're so feeling disconnected too. We all need a sense of belonging. We all need to have a community that sees us and that can hear us and witness and, like, honor us for who we are as a person, regardless of what we do, regardless of our achievements, but just from our heart and our values and our life on this planet. And so for the parents out there listening, my encouragement is a couple. One is, make sure to prioritize spending one-on-one time with your child, however old they are, whether they're 5 years old or 17 years old. It's so important to prioritize that parent bond with your young person.
Especially if you have multiple kids. Speaking of someone with three, it's so hard to make that one-on-one time, but it's so crucial.
Yeah.
I mean, so crucial.
Yes, that one-on-one time is important. Finding a place for them to find community is also equally important. That can happen through sports, that can happen through theater. But for a lot of kids, neither of those things speak to them. So where is their community in school? Where is their community after school? Do they have a group to belong to so that they can feel that sense of camaraderie and friendship? Additionally, I also want to just emphasize the need for mentors. We talk about it in our work all the time, and it's something that is missing in our culture that celebrates the nuclear family, that it has to be the parents that raise their child or their children alone. And it used to be the village. It used to be uncles and aunts and neighbors that were also supporting these young people. And when you have a mentor in your young person's life, like, it can make a world of difference. Because if I was the parent, and I told my child one thing about diet or health or friendships, whatever it may be, it might not land in the same way as a role model that your young person has that they look up to, that's a little bit closer in age and stage. And they could say the exact same thing, but it might be received very differently. Mm-hmm. So finding a place to belong, a community, finding a mentor for your children's lives, and spending that one-on-one time with your child is something that I would really want to emphasize as well.
You know, the technology piece is just so huge. I keep thinking about these kids who in high school, they always, this thing of seeing, like, homecoming pictures online, or that whole fear of missing out thing. You're always feeling like everyone else has a better life than you have, because they're captured on photos. And I know with our kids, that was always, I would kind of brace myself all the time when there were photos after big parties or get togethers, this sense of isolation of not having the life that others have. Do you think with the journeymen, when you go out with the kids, do they manage to detox to get away from that life of constantly checking in on what others are doing? And how hard is that?
Short answer is they do eventually, but it just feels temporary. What I like to remember is there's this experience within the first few days, especially when we've been acclimating to the world without devices, and it's like they get ghost notifications where they'll reach for their pocket habitually and there's nothing there. And sometimes it's hilarious. Like we'll be in circle and we'll watch someone, they'll do the panic, like, oh, I lost my phone. And they'll look around and then realize, you know, there's no phone, and they settle back down. But sometimes it'll happen for several days. And usually, you know, in the longer experiences we do, by the end, it's not there anymore. And I want to say the underlying message there is that it's so intense, the addictive capacity of that. We had actually a guest on our own podcast not that long ago, a couple of years ago, who he spoke directly to it. He just said, you know, in the spectrum from sugar to cocaine, mm-hmm. tech addiction is way closer to cocaine when we measure its impact on the brain. So like just the way it, you know, integrates itself as a dopamine mm-hmm. Hit for young people. And also it's so ubiquitous, right? It's mm-hmm. hard to regulate, and it gives them so much of the need that Alex spoke to, right? The real human connective need. So much of that is funneled through a device now that it's hard to separate like what's serving them and also what's, you know, really serving, well, in this case, technology marketers and big tech companies. But it's difficult. And I wish that, you know, I wish that when we left camp, there was a solution for how to integrate that. But the reality is when they get back from one of these experiences, they're right back into it. And it's hard.
You know, we read a lot about the whole issue of toxic masculinity. Those issues are very present in our media. Is that something that you really thoughtfully built into the development of Journeyman and how it came together, addressing that with young boys?
Yeah. Short answer, yes. And it's interesting. It's an interesting topic because it is a buzzword that can, depending on the circle that you're speaking with, can really ruffle some feathers. And I think Nikki and I both share the understanding that there are patterns within our culture, there are patterns within masculinity that are in fact toxic. When we consider homophobia, when we consider misogyny, when we consider violence and some of these other oppressive patterns that are manifesting in our culture, that's toxic, straight up. And I think what often can happen is you throw out a phrase like toxic masculinity and certain people get on the defensive, like we're saying all of masculinity is toxic or all men are toxic. And that's simply not true. Like, we love and support and uplift the male youth in our community, men in our community. And so we definitely don't feel like men are inherently toxic. And we're striving to address some of those patterns that are perpetuating harm in our culture. So it's interesting. It's like we are cautious to use that word outwardly. We have very explicit conversations about that topic and of what that means to young people in our mentoring groups. And we've also recognized that it can turn a lot of people away before they even are willing to come in the door if we use that too much outward facing. So our hope and our intention is to create a space and an organization that is welcoming to all people, that regardless of your political affiliation, regardless of your ideology, whether it's faith-based or what have you, that this can be a place where you feel seen and respected and heard. And that's one of those lines that we strive to toe is to be mindful of phrases and words that are gonna prevent people from accessing supports that they would likely benefit from.
That's a good point that Alex brings up too. You know, if I think about the qualities of someone who exhibits behavior that we would call mm-hmm. toxic masculinity, how unlikely is that person going to be to enroll themselves or their child in our work mm-hmm. if we're using that word, mm-hmm. right? It's going to be triggering on its own right. And so we think a lot about who needs, you know, heart medicine the most, mm-hmm. who needs to be in our circle, who's going to go on and have influence later in life, and who isn't going to get you know, an opportunity to dive into this inquiry in an intimate way. And a lot of time that comes up with thinking about enrolling folks from very different political beliefs than we might have, or our facilitators, or even Vashon as a whole, which oftentimes, you know, we get seen up here in the liberal Northwest as being very socially progressive. And that's only partially true. I mean, we work with a lot of kids from, you know, who live in a rural background, who have more conservative values. And it's critical that we are creating those spaces so that folks, no matter their belief system, no matter the household they were raised in, they can come into this and really be an inquiry around, well, what are my values? Mm-hmm. Like, what do I believe? And the fascinating thing that we've learned is in our process, which has very little teaching, we don't have a curriculum, so to speak, for virtually any of our camps. But there's a process by which we engage in deep inquiry. Mm-hmm. And what we've realized over now 5 years is, overwhelmingly, when young people are given a chance to ask, what are my values? What do I care about? How do I want to show up in the world? They very quickly toss out many of those behaviors that we would call toxic masculinity. Mm-hmm. They say things like, I want the women and girls in my presence to feel safe. They say things like, I want to feel okay, like touching other people, boys and men, and not feel like that's gay or weird. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And they share these things, right, that are so hopeful and awe-inspiring, and they're not our words, right? Our mentors aren't telling young people. And that's another thing that comes up. A lot of folks are concerned that there's a lot of like social programming going on, and that's never been the intent. It's really about keeping that inquiry alive for young people to be in question and to really look at things that they pick up in the culture, maybe pick up in their household, but oftentimes pick up from peers, school, and the internet. And when we think about how unfiltered the digital world is today, it's so crucial that they have a chance to process this stuff in real life with people who can see a different perspective. And I think that's a lot of our role, is to hold a different perspective for these young folks.
These, you know, these kind of conversations, I just want to say thank you to you both, because some of this stuff is just really sensitive, right, for people to hear about, especially if they're not going deep in and they just hear about it in passing. I'm a speaker now with Humanities Washington, and I speak about sexual harassment, which is something I experienced a long time ago. And I go into every speech just a little bit braced, because it's real personal. It's not academic. It's a personal thing that would not be treated lightly by me if someone were to push back. So I just really want to say thank you for going into those spaces and having these conversations that are so incredibly important again and again. I'm sure it's not always, it's not easy work necessarily, but I imagine very fulfilling work. So thank you for doing that. What about girls? Do you just work with boys? Have girls ever been an audience for Journeymen? Is there a tandem group? How do you, tell me about that?
Great question. there's kind of two threads that feel worth sharing in this moment. One is that since we founded Journeymen 5 years ago, there was a handful of community members that asked that exact same question mm-hmm. that you just asked. And they started to trickle in pretty quickly. And before we knew it, we had at least 20 people that had asked that question, mostly women in our community. And mm-hmm. both Nikki and I also feel passionate about that, those types of experiences, rites of passage experiences mm-hmm. being offered for the young women in our community. And we also felt like we didn't have the lived experience to really usher in an experience for stepping into womanhood. Mm-hmm. So we invited all of the women that had asked that question to a potluck. And named, like, actually, here's the question. Here's what we all have in common, was this question, and offered to support, offered to share resources of our nonprofit application and bylaws and things. And I'm excited to share that they've created a nonprofit. And so Vashon Sisterhood has been providing mentorship and camp experiences for girls in our community for the past 3 years now, maybe even 4 years, somewhere around there, 3 or 4 years. In addition, we just actually, we're really excited to share that Journeymen is launching what we're calling the One Village Initiative. And that is experiences that are open to all genders, boys, girls, non-binary youth, mm-hmm. transgender youth, any young person is welcome in the One Village. And so we really are striving to meet the need of the community. When we first started Journeymen, that was inspired by the need that we were seeing, the concerns that were being raised in our personal lives and in our community. And we've continued to hear questions from young people, from families about what can anybody come? Can my son come? Can my daughter come? Can my child who is non-binary, can they come on this experience? And so we're really excited. This summer, we're going to be offering one for elementary kids called Kindle for a parent and child, late elementary and their guardian, whether that's their parent or an aunt or uncle or grandparent. That's called Kindle in the late spring for all genders. And additionally, we're also creating an experience for eighth graders graduating from our local middle school, which is hosted through One Village as well for all gender youth. And we're just getting started there. Like that is something that we're excited to share with the world. And there is more to come, but we're going to hold off on making all the announcements now. But we're dreaming big and we're excited to help to improve our community by working with all of the young people here.
That's so great. You know, I used to sing in the Seattle Women's Chorus, and they did a concert, I think it was maybe 6 years ago, 7 years ago, and it was a women's chorus concert all about camp songs. And when a friend of mine, it was Michael Saltman, who used to be our superintendent, asked me to go to this concert because he used to run Camp Arkyla. Yep. Up in Orcas Island, and I had worked with Campfire, so we both are big camp people, and so we went to this concert together, and it's what inspired me to join the women's chorus, because I was so in awe by this performance. But the one thing that really got me was the number of women who came to the microphone and said, growing up, I didn't belong. Growing up, I had a horrible experience as a person who was becoming used to being gay, and it was something I struggled with. And camp gave me a place where I could feel at home and find my people and find comfort. It was the recurring theme throughout the night. And I was just bawling throughout the concert. I had never known about how camp could play that function or play that role for someone, a place to be yourself. It was really amazing. Got me to join the chorus. So you reminded me of that. I can only imagine the number of kids that you've given a place to feel themselves. So thank you for doing that.
I appreciate hearing that story, Lori. And, you know, there's so many blessings that unfold from a camp experience, and hearing about your story, it just reminds me of the power of song, right? Mm-hmm. Like camps, like it's one of the only places young people can sing around a fire and not feel judged, not feel like they're going to get filmed and put on TikTok. And like learning and feeling like collectively, like, what is it like to sing in a group? And I know, I struggled singing publicly for a long time. I always felt ashamed by it. And I never really sang around people. I thought I couldn't sing. Mm-hmm. And now, having been on camp experiences and gotten to just sing with young folks, old folks, feeling the power of tapping into my voice. And like song is one example, but really for young people to find their voice and to feel empowered to share their voice and their truth, and that is needed, and that we need their gifts in this world at this time, that it's actually why they're here. Yeah. So I love that little story of camp. And also just want to give a shout out to Michael Saltman. We owe a lot of gratitude to that man. He really believed in us in his final years as superintendent, and created a partnership between Journeymen and Vashon Island School District. And it's what has become our model for mentoring, was largely because of Michael's support and belief in our work.
I'll make sure and share this with him. Well, last question for you both. I know we're running out of time. Where do you go from here? Where do you see the years ahead for Journeymen? What does that look like? And I'm not asking for a whole map, because that's a lot to ask of you. Just tell me something that you would like to see in the future.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'll just name our pie in the sky goal is to provide mentorship and rites of passage for every young person that comes through our community. And that's a big undertaking. And we don't know exactly how that's going to unfold, but we're putting the pieces together, and we're making steps in that direction each day. And to really see what does that do for a community when every young person is seen and heard, every young person is supported through mentorship, every young person is acknowledged in their transitions in life and supported as they make that leap to the unknown of what's next. Mm-hmm. And I'll share the vision of our organization, which is really what informs so much of what we do. And that's what's in front of us is making that a reality, which is men of integrity, respecting all, thriving together. And that's the direction that we're heading, providing mentorship and rites of passage for all the young people in our community and trying to support other communities to do the same. We recognize that we can't do it. We're not trying to become the Boy Scouts of America and be in every state. That's unsustainable. And we recognize the need and importance for it to come locally, to be community-based so that it's generated from that community, relevant for that community, and supported by the adults and the mentors in that community so they can be there present for the young people after and before the experience itself.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Nikki?
I think some of the conversations that feel like really inspiring for me, they're stoking my fire, are when we imagine embedding, one of the things we already do very well is embedding leadership roles for young people to not just, you know, see their gifts, but actually start to apply those into our work or into the community. And we started talking about ways where we can really develop some new training pathways for young people to learn how to become a mentor. Mm-hmm. Learn how to essentially create and design a service project that makes an impact that they care about, right? It's not just random. As an example, a lot of young people have a community service requirement and it's very transactional, right? Oh, I got my 30 hours and I'm done. Mm-hmm. And to me, there's so much more that's possible there. And so we've been dreaming up a way to kind of reimagine how young people in our work, but also the community at large, look at service and to connect our leadership pathway to real heart-centered action for the community and train young people to go out and get it and not sit on the bench anymore of their lives, but to be like, I can have an impact tomorrow, right? Like I can go and do this and I have resources and it matters, right? This changes lives. And I think that's a real antidote to some of the kind of disconnected things that we've talked about. Like there's a sense that, you know, that's big and out there and might change a life later, yeah. But to really get them focused on the here and now and their local sphere of influence. So I want to develop young leaders and really get them focused on community issues that matter to them and then support them to go out and take action.
Great. Where do people go if they want to find you, learn more? Sign up, where do they go?
Yeah, easy is online, journeymen.us. And we're on social at journeymen, Instagram. And I think Facebook is good old facebook.com/journeymen. As always, you know, I want to say the substance is so much of what we do comes out in conversation. So if anyone's curious, reach out. And if you do happen to be local to Vashon or want to grab a coffee, take a walk, Alex, right? We love trail walks. Hit us up. We'd love to share what we do. And we're so grateful for you listening today.
Well, I just want to say, Lori, thank you for having us on the podcast today. It's an honor to be invited.
Yeah, I probably should not belabor it, but someday you will be sitting in this seat and you will know the strange feeling when, in my mind, Alex, you're 13, 14 years old, playing sports and carrying your, what was the lacrosse stick you always carried around? And my son was 2 and 3, I think, when he developed a little bit of an Alex crush and he was always running down the driveway. And I think he was about 2 and a half one day where I was like, Will's gone. I can't find Will anywhere. And he was like down at your house. He said, you guys were friends. So anyway, it's very cool when you see people grow and morph into people like you. So I just appreciate seeing Nikki and Alex, all the great stuff you're doing. You give me hope. So thank you both. All right. Well, thank you again. And hopefully you will continue to do great things. And I appreciate you giving my time. And I'm going to wrap that up before I start crying. Thanks to everyone for tuning in to Washington Game Changers. You can find more of our podcast at our website, which is educationvoters.org. Or you can find me on Twitter or many other channels because I am too into social media. So thanks again to everyone. Take care.